From Tralee to the Blaskets, from Lixnaw to Kilgarvan, your voice in the kingdom, Radio Kerry.
The greatest day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 7 of The Greatest Day focuses on 1926. Old foes Kildare would once again be the final barrier for Kerry to overcome if they were to regain the crown surrendered off the field the previous season. Throughout the programme, we'll be reproducing extracts from the Kerry man of that year. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you'll hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry's defence of the title they won in 1924 came to an end at a central council meeting. The Kingdom had beaten Cavan to qualify for the 1925 final, but the Northerners objected, claiming Kerry's Phil O'Sullivan was illegal. The objection was upheld and Kerry were thrown out of the competition. Kerry then objected to a Cavan player and the Breffni men were also ejected from the championship. The other semi-final saw Mayo defeat Wexford, even though the Connacht championship had not yet been completed, with Mayo nominated by their provincial council. When the Connacht decider was eventually played, Galway prevailed against Mayo and were subsequently declared All-Ireland champions. Kerry had been given all the motivation needed to regain the crown they relinquished in such controversial circumstances. Across the world in 1926, John Logie Baird proved the principle of television. Violet Gibson, daughter of an Irish peer, failed in her attempt to assassinate Benito Mussolini. Londoners were treated to the city's first set of traffic lights. Marilyn Monroe was born. Escapologist Harry Houdini died aged 52. The 1926 campaign began with a first-round tie against Clare. Many of the victorious side of 1924 were still involved, such as John Joe Barrett, Jack Walsh, Bob Stack, John Joe Sheehy and Jackie Ryan. Their cause that season was aided by the introduction of Tralee duo Johnny Reardon and Dennis Rory O'Connell, Ballymac's Pat Clifford and Tom O'Mahony from Moyvan. Kerry opened with a less than convincing 6 points to 1-1 triumph over the men from the Banner County.
Our senior footballers had a very close call against Clare at Milltown Malbay and only scraped home by 2 points. Last year, when the teams met in the Munster final, Kerry won as they pleased. The previous year, our forwards raised the green flag so often that they told the umpires in the last quarter to raise no further flags. All of which points to the fact that Kerry form has deteriorated very much since then. Of the 6 points scored by Kerry, JJ Sheehy accounted for 4. Had this player been off colour, Kerry would probably have lost. This time, Kerry were short Con Brosnan at midfield, but fielded a sufficiently strong team that should have won in more convincing style against third raters like Clare. Our chances of Munster honours are by no means bright, while an All-Ireland is unthinkable in our present form. The fact of the matter is changes are wanted in our senior team. Last Sunday's game was the writing on the wall. Unless new blood is introduced, Kerry will meet their Waterloo and can bid goodbye to All-Ireland for some time to come.
Cork were to provide the opposition in the Munster semi-final, but ahead of that, Kerry played Tipperary in the McGrath Cup final. The prize on offer was a silver cup and medals presented by Pat McGrath, then Secretary of the Munster Council. Kerry won by 5 points to 2. Jerry Moriarty captained Kerry in that McGrath Cup final. So the old enemy awaited in the Munster semi-final. For Kerry, the focus was as much on who was missing as who would be lining out.
Kerry play Cork at Listowel in the Munster semi-final. I understand Cork will rely on many of the university college players. Whatever their football abilities are, they will be certainly well trained. With a depleted, ill-trained team, Kerry will be set a hard proposition to win. If we survive the Cork test, we are to meet Tipperary in Cork. Mr. DJ Bailey, the energetic secretary of the county board, has circularised the various players to get into training. In the course of the circular, Mr. Bailey writes, "Need I point out to you the very tough proposition Tipperary is going to be? They are confident of annexing this year's Munster Championship. They are so confident that they objected to Kerry being nominated to represent Munster in the All-Ireland semi-final. With all these warnings, there can be no excuse for any player who is not trained to the ounce to do himself and his county justice in the forthcoming test. A Kerry Goyle, whose opinion commands great weight, has suggested to me that Kerry should undergo a special course of training for the All-Ireland semi-final. That is, if we survive in the Munster Championships. Lack of funds will be the crux. But the Munster Council has always assisted us in the past and friends at home and abroad. Against Cork, Kerry will be without Phil O'Sullivan, Jack Murphy, Paul Russell and Con Brosnan, a formidable quartet. The men to fill their places, and indeed the team as a whole, must give of their best to beat Cork.
The same quartet had also been missing in the first round. However, their absence this time around would, it was predicted, be more telling. Kerry made one change for the Cork game. Tralee's Jack McCarthy preferred to North Kerry's Paul O'Sullivan in defence. Kerry gave themselves a mountain to climb against Cork, conceding two early goals and trailing by 6 points after only 12 minutes.
Cork were showing up in surprising form, their kicking and fielding being all that could be desired. Kerry came and Ryan sent between the sticks for the opening point. Cork were going strong and Fortune sent in a fine centre into the Kerry goalmouth. In a ruck, the ball entered the net. The score infused great life into the game and Cork came again. At 40 yards range, they got a free, which Duggan sent clean into the net. It is the bare truth, Kerry received a rude shock. So that some of us were by no means as optimistic as the railway people, whose posters we had read the previous day, announcing the Kerry-Tipperary-Munster final. Two goals for Cork in as many minutes made Kerry uneasy.
But they were level by half-time, with a Paddy Farran goal proving the catalyst.
Murphy punted well down, and a blunder by a Kerry defender left Sullivan in possession, and the white flag went up for Cork. Cork supporters cheered lustily, and many a Kerry face looked glum. These reverses nettled Kerry, and swept through the field in lovely passing, Farran was left in possession. He crashed past Brennan amid tumultuous cheering. Nice play by Mahoney left Farran in possession, and straight and true, he shot over the bar. Kerry, working in strenuous fashion for the equalising score, had their best efforts foiled by a great defence. Nice play between the Kerry forwards and Bailey gave to Ryan, who just missed the net. Kerry returned the kick out and Ryan sent over the sticks, putting the teams level. Good play by Sheehy and Farran left Bailey in possession. He tried for goal, but Brennan conceded a 50 to clear.
At the short whistle, it was Kerry 1-4, Cork 2-1. Cork failed to add to their tally in the second period, while the Kerry men tagged on 5 more points.
Kerry came and Mahoney transferred to Ryan, who put Kerry ahead with a minor after 3 minutes play. Cork got moving from the kick, but Barrett cleared in the nick of time. Kerry were now generally on the attack, and a long kick by Stack was taken up by Farran, who sent wide. Kerry were going strong and secured a free at a sharp angle. Sheehy centred well, but the effort was cleared. Cork put in some vigorous work and Barrett saved the Kerry post. Play was in the Cork half, Kerry's persistent rushes being met by a great defence. With Kerry pressing, Stack lobbed to Mahoney and the white flag went up for Kerry. A long drive by Moriarty soon after was well fielded by Ryan, who scored a further minor. Cork were contesting every inch of the ground and play became somewhat rough. Kerry got a free close in and Mahoney hit the far upright, the ball going in for another point for Kerry. The Kingdom had the game now in its hands, but they never relaxed their efforts. Barrett centred a Kerry 50 and the ball hopped from a cluster of hands over the bar. After Kerry's Clifford had brought off a great clearance, Kerry came away and Farran just missed the net. Kerry 1-9, Cork 2-1. It was a hard, vigorous game, in which the referee allowed the players plenty of latitude. There were many fouls on both sides, but Kerry came in for most frees.
7 days later, Kerry were in action again, Tipperary providing the opposition in the Munster final. It was feared Tip would pose a serious threat, with talk of a vastly better team than that which represented them in the McGrath Cup. Kerry were severely strengthened for the match. Jack Murphy, Paul Russell and Con Brosnan all returned. Any apprehension about the result was misguided.
The Tipperary scare proved a damp squib, Kerry being decisively superior. Even with the wind and sun in their favour in the opening half, Tipperary were more than held.
Kerry may have held the edge after the first period, but it was a tight half.
Martin Shanahan punted over from far out for Tipperary's opening point after 3 minutes. Lovely combination between the Kerry forwards left the Tipperary defender standing, and Sheehy steadied himself 20 yards out to send over the bar for the equaliser score. Great play by Paul Russell was followed by a free to Kerry about 30 yards out, and from the free, JJ Sheehy put the Kingdom ahead. Brosnan's kick was sailing wide when Bailey punched in front of the post and Ryan missed at point-blank range. Bailey, going strong, was fouled, and from an angled free, Sheehy raised the white flag. Kerry returned the kick and Sheehy led another move. Giving to Ryan close in, Kerry went further ahead to the tune of a point. A long ball by Tipperary's Gus McCarthy landed in the Kerry square, the leather hopping over the bar. At this stage, the altercation between two players resulted in both being ordered off. Kerry's Gerry Moriarty and Tipperary's Gus McCarthy. Lovely passing between Ryan and Sheehy left Jim Bailey in possession to send between the uprights. Tip sent wide, but shortly after, Shanahan scored. Good play by Doran and Aragon, and the white flag went up for Tipperary.
Kerry led 6-4 at half-time. They outscored Tip by 5 points to a goal in a disappointing second period.
Sheehy sent in with deadly accuracy, and McNamara cleared for a 50. Brosnan's shot, going wide, was boxed in by Bailey. Sheehy receiving, just missed. A long kick by Brosnan put Kerry well into Tipperary territory, and Bailey found the net, but the whistle had gone for a foul. From the free, Sheehy scored a minor after 5 minutes play. Mahoney and Sheehy indulged in nice passing, the latter again scoring a minor for Kerry. Good play by Russell left John Bailey in possession. He shot for goal, but Carroll saved. Sheehy got on the clearance and sent over the bar. Play was constantly in Tip territory. When they got away, they were easily checked by the Kerry halves. As time advanced, Kerry were all over their opponents. Kerry eased off after scoring a few more minors per Ryan and Sheehy.
When it arrived, Tip's goal was but a consolation. Kerry had won in Munster again, this time at a scoreline of 11 points to 1-4.
Tipperary, playing with the wind and sun in their favour, made matters lively in the opening half. But Kerry were clearly the superior team. They outfielded Tipperary, outmanoeuvred them all over the field, excelled in passing, and had far the lengthier kicks. When Kerry had the wind in the last half, they dominated the game. And had they all gone out, the scores would be considerably more in their favour. Only rarely in the last half did Tip look like scoring, and the goal came off a rush when the Kerry players had eased off. Sheehy was never called on the Kerry goal. Our fulls were easily masters of the Tip front line. Russell played an outstanding game in a good half-back line. Stack played brilliantly all through, while Brosnan, playing under a severe handicap, played well. Sheehy and Ryan were easily the pick of the Kerry forwards. But it must be added that the Kerry forwards played a far more convincing game than formerly. But the game was no index as to Kerry's true worth, because the team was not properly tested.
The Kingdom were now through to an All-Ireland semi-final against Cavan.
We can look forward to a dour, determined struggle for supremacy. Cavan are streets a classier team than Tipperary, and far more dangerous. On the two previous occasions the teams met, Kerry won by a solitary point. In the recent friendly, Kerry had one time held a 5 points lead. Cavan not only reduced that margin, but actually went ahead. Our northern friends maintain they are superior footballers to Kerry. Perhaps.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
West Kerry's Joe Sullivan was drafted in for the Cavan match, ousting Paddy Farran. Kerry were to prove superior almost from the outset.
Here in the Kingdom, when one inquired of a friend if he were going to Dublin, the answer invariably was, "I'm waiting for the final." Those who stayed at home proved to be singularly good judges. It was a pretty even game for about 15 minutes, though Kerry had somewhat the balance of the play. Then a point, quickly followed by a goal, were recorded in favour of Kerry. Thereafter, it was a rout. Cavan's great confidence was shattered. Their morale was broken, and long before the last whistle, they were a badly beaten team.
The Irish Times report read along the same lines.
Cavan, with the wind and sun to aid them, attacked quickly, per McGee and J.P. Murphy. The Ulstermen had a great chance in the first few minutes, but dallied with the ball and gave Barrett a chance of coming round to save his post. Brosnan and Sheehy figured in characteristic Kerry football from the kick-out, and Kerry swept down on Cavan's lines. Ryan placed Sullivan at close quarters, but his shot was yards astray. The game was even for 7 minutes. Long punting featured, but both sides were whistled up frequently for minor infringements. Slattery went on for Sullivan, and Sheehy raced clear, swinging in a great shot just wide of the uprights. He missed a free close in within a minute, but soon a great combined burst by Brosnan and Stack gave Bailey a chance. He crossed to Ryan, who landed a grand point from long range. Pressing vigorously, the Kerrymen gave Cavan defenders no respite. Brosnan's free reached the area, and after Kiernan saved under the bar, Ryan flashed in and netted for Kerry with a grand drive. Kerry had secured the lead by using their opportunities well. But in the succeeding 10 minutes, Cavan put up a fine fight. They made a sturdy, clever midfield line, and they harassed Kerry's backs. The Munster men defended with great courage, and the game was well advanced before Farrelly opened Cavan's score from a free 12 yards out. It was the last score in the first half, for the backs beat the forwards at either end. J.P. Murphy had a great chance of goaling when the two Kerry defenders collided in their eagerness, but the army man was not so deadly a marksman as usual. Sheehy was working like a Trojan. Kiernan brought down a great shot of his under the bar, and just before the half-time hit the post from far out with a powerful ball.
The half ended with Kerry ahead 1-1 to 1 point. Just as was the case against Cork earlier in the campaign, Kerry outscored the opposition 5 points to nil in the second period. The Irish Times detailed the best of the action.
Kerry's backs treated Cavan's attack lightly, and they seemed to welcome every raid, which they handled comfortably. Cavan forwards had no chance against as a fine line as Kerry had fielded. Russell was brilliant on one wing, Moriarty on the other. Ryan missed an open goal, but from the kick-out, Sheehy fielded confidently and drove a long ball high above the crossbar. Kerry continued to field better. They punted with great length, and when it came to dour struggles for possession, they easily held the master hand. Moriarty was the most improved man on the team. He always seemed to be in position and countered many promising Cavan movements. From a long drive of his, Mahoney crossed to Bailey, who placed Ryan, and that fast, cool footballer raised another Kerry flag. A typical Kerry drive upfield followed. They swept the Cavan men before them, and Ryan from 50 yards out drove home a point with great accuracy, setting Kerry 7 points ahead. The Munster men had the measure of their opponents by this time, and had their scoring line used all their opportunities, Cavan would have been in a hopeless position. The Ulster champions never lost heart, and from a free by Conway, P. Kerwin gave a grand pass to Captain Murphy close in. Kerry backs were on him before he could steady himself for a shot, and Cavan were still goalless. Mahoney drove wide twice for Kerry, and Bailey missed another chance near the end.
The 1970s publication, Years of Glory, credits John Joe Sheehy and Tom O'Mahony with Kerry's two other points in that period. Cavan, beaten by 1-6 to 1 point, were well and truly put in their place.
Cavan are by this time sadder and wiser men. Sunday's defeat will cure their conceit, of which they and their partisans seemed to have an overdose. Cavan had undergone 3 weeks training for the event, Kerry had none. But Kerry lacked little on the score of fitness, and our men were sufficiently in form to stand a grueling hour. The score does not represent the run of the play. Kerry were worth double the scores. It was the first time I have ever seen a Kerry team press home their advantage over outclassed opponents. Kerry, 8 wides in each half, scored 1-1 to 1 point in first half, and 5-0 in second. Only 190 people followed Kerry to the Metropolis, a record small crowd. To the men of the past, our reputation due. We are custodians of the great football traditions.
For the fourth season running, Kerry had qualified for the All-Ireland final. Kildare, 2-5 to 2 points winners over Galway, were to provide the opposition. The game against Cavan may have been relatively straightforward for Kerry, but the build-up to the decider was anything but. Matters both on and off the field threatened the kingdom's challenge. Paddy Foley, GAA writer, recalled yet another railway dispute concerning Kerry.
A Saturday special was arranged to run from Tralee. North Kerry enthusiasts asked for a connection with Listowel, and their request was supported by the county board. The railway company did not accede to this demand, and a public meeting of protest was held in Listowel. The North Kerry players were requested not to travel. More sensible counsels ultimately prevailed.
Listowel got what they had requested, but there was more sensation as the big game approached.
Jerry Moriarty, the crack left half, met with an injury to his ankle, which prevented him training, and his inclusion in the team was doubtful to the last. For a similar reason, Phil Sullivan was long regarded as a doubtful starter. A phone message was received from Con Brosnan on the Wednesday before the match, saying he was ill and unable to play, but that he would travel as sub.
The team selection for the final added to what had already been a dramatic build-up.
What a sensation that selection produced. There were drastic changes. Reardon was called upon to guard the net. Joe Sullivan and Bill Gorman, two players young and inexperienced, were introduced. Dennis, better known as Rory O'Connell, was given the left wing position. Pat Clifford had injured himself in training. Would he be fit in the event of Phil Sullivan being unable to play?
In the end, Jerry Moriarty, Phil Sullivan and Con Brosnan all lined out, with Pat Clifford a used sub. Kildare named an unchanged lineup from their semi-final victory over Galway. With these many dramas out of the way, supporters could concentrate on the matter in hand. The Irish Times painted the picture of a packed Croke Park on match day.
From an early hour, it was clear to observers of Dublin City's normal life that something unusual was on foot. They came from all quarters. They took possession of the city. O'Connell Street was packed to overflowing by 1:30. Good-humoured visitors trekked slowly to Croke Park in an ever-increasing stream. The facts are that at 3 o'clock, the accommodation was fully taxed. Thousands were still in the city, and they poured in on Croke Park in an ever-increasing stream. Touchline and reserve stand seats were sold out early. The turnstiles were closed at 3:23. 3 minutes later, the crowd found any possible accommodation, and when the football final started at 3:35, an anxious throng packed the entrances. The glamour of 23 years old association was responsible for much of this enthusiasm. In 1905, the same teams played football of a class never known to the code. They had many later engagements. The material remained, and the old tradition has found its outlet again.
Kildare drew first blood in the final.
Jack Higgins centred to Doyle, who crashed low and hard. Reardon tipped over the bar to save his net, and the white flag went up after 1 minute's play. Kildare were having the better of the play.
The Times takes up the story.
It was a well-planned opening for Kildare. Kerry fought with great vigour on reopening. Brosnan and Stack were prominent in midfield for Kerry, but Kildare were very aggressive. The Munster defenders were sound. Murphy was immense. He beat back those Kildare speed merchants as a granite rock beats back the waves which harass his native coast. Frees were frequent for slight infringements. Doyle and Russell had close duels for possession. Kildare attacked relentlessly. Sullivan, playing sound, vigorous football, brought off many clearances.
However, the valiant Kerry defence was eventually breached.
Stanley put Kildare attacking and Kerry fouling 30 yards out. Stanley had no difficulty in scoring a further minor.
Kerry were to suffer another setback, as described in the Times.
For many minutes, it was a struggle between Kerry's backs and Kildare's forwards. The backs were masters of the situation. O'Sullivan's knee gave way. He retired and Clifford came on.
Eventually, Kerry registered on the scoreboard.
Brosnan, going strong from the hop, was fouled. Sheehy secured the free and, sidestepping two opponents, he sent in a long drop. The leather landed just under the bar and Cummins tipped over the bar to save his net after 22 minutes play.
That proved to be Kerry's only score of the half, but goal chances arrived at either end.
Sheehy did some wonderful play. At 25 yards range, he tried to goal, but Cummins saved in great style. At close range, Stanley sent in a stinging grounder. Reardon dived to the leather and brought off a wonderful save.
Kerry trailed 2-1 at half-time, and the Times felt Kildare's domination merited greater reward.
Kildare's lead was not so good as their territory attacks warranted. They were involved with a powerful defence. The Kerry backline was firm and clever. Murphy, the big guardsman, took a big part in the game. He kept the score down by grand handling and powerful kicking. He had fine assistance from Barrett and Russell. To Kerry's powerful backline, the low score at halfways may be attributed.
The Times now expected the Kingdom to push on and exert their authority.
It seemed that Kerry, with their well-known reserve power and resolve, would, with wind and sun to aid them, fairly smother this team, which they had held so well. For the wind and sun meant much in Gaelic football, where the ball is usually given high and far. Not a bit of it. So good were Kildare in the early part of the second period that the game seemed won by the beautifully polished football of Kildare.
The Lilywhites did put themselves in a game-winning position.
Kildare brushed through at the start of the second half, and from far out, Paul Doyle put them two in front. Kerry were just now well, and a high ball from Stack was fielded by Ryan, who landed a lovely point. Kerry fouled in the corner from a very difficult angle near the touch. Stanley raised the white flag with a beautiful left kick. Sub Clifford, playing a reliable game, retired injured. He was replaced by John Slattery. A bad foul by Kerry at 30 yards range enabled Stanley to show his marksmanship, and the white flag again went up. Lovely hand passing by Kildare saw Stanley give to O'Neill close in. He tried to goal, but Reardon saved. Sheehy put in some dashing play before giving to Gorman. The latter punted over the bar. A free at midfield to Kildare was returned, but O'Loughlin got on the ball and from far out sent between the uprights. With 7 minutes to go, the Leinster champions leading by 3 points, it looked as if Kildare would win.
The Irish Times knew better than to write off the Kingdom.
These Kerry men are dour material. From the throw-in at the second session, we may divide the game into two periods, 20 minutes and 10. During the 20 minutes, Kildare played Tig with the Kerry men. They seemed to mesmerise the Munster men. The Kildare men were winning all over the field. With their 6 point up, the game looked as good as won. However, fighting every inch of the way, Kerry refused to be beaten. Many men were leaving the grounds, assuming that Kildare's position was unassailable. Fighting recklessly, Kerry worked down. It seemed to me at this period that Kildare were overconfident, for they rested on their oars for a fatal moment. Walsh had a soft, loose ball in Kerry's defence. He gripped it lightly and drove out to Russell. The guardsman fed O'Gorman, and the newcomer in the Kerry team smashed the ball home to the net. It was a wonderful goal and a fitting result of Kerry's gameness. Sheehy almost won their game in the last minute, but having watched the teams closely and knowing time was almost up, the crowd were relieved when the ball sailed wide of the posts. A drawn game played in splendid spirit before the biggest company of spectators that ever watched a Gaelic game.
At the full-time whistle, the score read, Kerry won 3, Kildare 6 points. The Kingdom had gotten out of jail.
Kerry played streets below their usual form. They did not reproduce the style which carried them so far through the competition. Our men repeatedly misjudged the ball. Their passes generally went astray, and anybody knowing them well felt something was wrong. The Kerry stars never shone. Some of them were poor. Whatever the excuse, it was not the usual Kerry form. Our defence was the one redeeming feature. The Kerry fulls and goalman saved the Kingdom from certain defeat. Reardon was wonderful in goal. His great save from Stanley's grounder was marvellous. The Kerry front line was outmatched by the Kildare backs all through. Kerry were at least held at midfield. Kerry underestimated Kildare. Had the Kingdom representatives gone down in the struggle, it would have been no disgrace to the wearers of the green and gold. It would be putting it mildly to say that the display given by Kildare was grand. All things considered, Kerry were a lucky team to make the game a draw.
Kerry midfield hero from the All-Ireland victories of 1913 and 1914, Pat Aeroplane O'Shea, was among the watching crowd that day. 13 years previous, O'Shea, in training for the Croke final replay against Louth, had befriended a member of the Kerry crop of 26.
The most regular visitor to the training camp was a red-haired, merry-eyed schoolboy named John. He was never referred to by his surname. John had a nice singing voice and often sang for us when the boys were resting. He tolerated me and shared my stool, although he knew I was a schoolmaster, and as such, the mutual foe of all right-minded boys. Years passed, and one September day, I watched the Kerry and Kildare teams march past the Hogan stand. There was my friend of long ago, John Reardon, who that day defended the Kerry Citadel.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
The replay would take place 6 weeks after the drawn encounter. The selected Kerry team saw Tom O'Mahony named in place of Dennis Rory O'Connell. A series of late dramas meant the side initially selected could not take to the field for the replay. Paddy Foley explained at the time how...
Misfortune seemed to dog the Kerrymen. Jack Murphy lay on his deathbed in a Tralee hotel. His loss could only be appreciated by those who saw his amazing display in the draw. Joe Sullivan took part in a friendly for which trophies were offered, and he was thus illegal. On arrival in Dublin, the players were greeted by Phil Sullivan carrying a stick. He too was horse de combat, three star players short. Such was the situation which confronted the selectors as they picked the team at midnight on Saturday.
Pat Clifford replaced the injured Phil O'Sullivan in the full-back line. John Slattery came in at left half-back. Jerry Moriarty moved to the centre and Jack Walsh dropped to the corner. Up front, Tom O'Mahony started, but so too did Dennis Rory O'Connell after Joe Sullivan was ruled illegal. Owen Corry's book, An Illustrated History of the GAA, notes that in the wake of the drawn game, the aforementioned Jack Murphy put on his clothes without bothering to take off his playing gear. Days later, Murphy was taken ill. While Kerry's changes for the decider were enforced, Kildare altered their forward division in the hope of overcoming the Kingdom's match-saving defence of the drawn encounter. It was not to be, as Kerry's defenders once more stood firm, conceding just 4 points as the Kingdom claimed the honours. Kildare did, however, hold the upper hand after the first half.
Kerry burst through the field and Gorman was left in possession. He passed out to Ryan, who landed a lovely point amid wild Kerry cheering after 8 minutes play. Jack Higgins sent in a telling shot just under the bar. Reardon saved his net at the expense of a minor, and the scores were level after 15 minutes. Buckley saved a great drive by Brosnan. Russell was beating Doyle, and Brosnan was out on his own at midfield. Keen judges anticipated trouble for Kildare. Sheehy came along in a great individual burst, and Cummins was lucky to clear on the goal line. A wonderful Kerry dash brought play to the Kildare end. Gough cleared, but Russell got the ball just inside the 50 and fly-kicked between the posts, giving the Kingdom the lead after 20 minutes play. Kildare's inside men missed two great opportunities of scoring. Curtis raised the white flag for the equalising score. Clever passing by Kildare left the Kerry sticks bombarded. Kerry were hotly pressed and fouled about 15 yards range. Stanley did not attempt to goal, however. He readily scored a minor, giving Kildare the lead. Bailey cleverly passed to Sheehy, and the Kerry captain missed a great chance. Another Sheehy effort was inches wide.
Kildare led 3-2 at the break.
Taken on the whole, it was an even half hour. Kerry held the ascendancy at midfield, and Stanley was not showing his old-time brilliancy. Kildare's front line was shaky, and erratic shooting deprived the All-Whites of a bigger lead.
Such squander mania persisted in the second period, according to the Times.
The breeze had died down when the teams resumed. A strong sun harassed the Kerry men. They played vigorous football, and Brosnan was prominent at midfield. O'Loughlin and Stack had many and well-balanced struggles. Forwards at both ends were wide of the posts. Kildare's men were the most serious offenders, for from many openings they drove wide, which might readily have given them a big lead.
Goal chances were spurred at either end before the telling moment arrived.
The Kerry defenders were sorely tested, but were always reliable. Clever play between Doyle and Stanley saw the latter sent in a terrific shot. Reardon got his hands to the leather, which rebounded off the crossbar for Clifford to secure and clear. Higgins sent Kildare away, and a free to the Leinster champions put the Kerry sticks in danger. The ball hit the post, rebounded into play, and Kerry cleared. Moriarty took the free and centred. The leather was punched by Sheehy across the sticks. Mahoney sprinted in and boxed the flying ball into the corner of the net.
That goal, the first score of the second half, put Kerry in front, 1-2 to 3 points, and the Kingdom built on the strike.
The Kerry men were in fighting vein and gave the Kildare defenders no respite. Bailey received and sent over to Mahoney. Mahoney fielded the high ball, sidestepped Graham, and a near left punt sent the leather oaring between the uprights. Loughlin sent in a high punt, which Paul Doyle deftly turned to advantage by raising the white flag. Kildare were attacking in desperation, but Kerry's defence was unbeatable. Bailey passed into Gorman, and the white flag went up for Kerry. Kerry won 4, Kildare 4 points.
Victory was Kerry's, and the plaudits were being handed out.
Weakened by the absence of three of their best players in the replay, the selected team rose gallantly to the occasion, and sheer pluck turned the balance in their favour. Without in any way detracting from the display of the Kerry 15, it was Moriarty's covering of Stanley and Mahoney's forward play brought the 1926 All-Ireland to the south. Reardon saved in capital style whenever called upon. Barrett was the mainstay of the defence and was well supported by Walsh and Clifford. Kerry's halves were great. Moriarty allowed Stanley no latitude. Russell's fielding, kicking and well-placed drops told in Kerry's favour. Slattery worked like a Trojan. Brosnan showed his old-time brilliancy in midfield. Stanley, therefore, did not get the ball so often, and when he did, it was only after a vigorous tussle. Brosnan was at his best. Kildare could not hold him. He was well backed by Stack, a tireless worker all throughout. Ryan beat his man easily and showed his old-time speed and accuracy. O'Connell did his best in a position to which he was unaccustomed. Sheehy was unwell and did not play up to his form of the drawn game, but he played superb football throughout. The Kerry inside men were far superior to Kildare's. Bailey played the best game of his life, and many of his centres led up to Kerry scores. Gorman was closely marked and not so effective as in the drawn battle. Mahoney was Kerry's star forward.
The Times did not disagree that the better team won. However, their reporter also felt the footballing gods were on Kerry's side.
Kerry will stagger home. So wrote We Here on Saturday. Kerry were lucky to stagger home, for the best men in Kerry were the defending uprights. Three times in the last half, the Kildare men shook the railway posts. Twice the upright next the entrance kicked back the fast Kildare attack, and when the crossbar was hit at midway, one felt that the luck was against Kildare. However, one must say that the better team won, and they won under great difficulties. Murphy and the Sullivan pair were off. A readjustment of Kerry's defence seemed to spell disaster. Kerry were replacing their team from weakness. Kildare were replacing theirs from strength, yet Kerry triumphed. They are a genuine team and deserve to hold the best championship they have ever won. It was a clean, honest game. Kerry's stern tactics broke up Kildare's smooth movements, and at the end, the game developed, as all championships do, into sheer manhood strength.
Kerry's victory over Kildare created no greater a surprise than within the betting fraternity.
Anyone caring to gamble might easily secure even money on the Kerry team in Tralee. In Dublin and elsewhere, the odds were 2-1. Betting is, of course, opposed to the laws of the GAA, but it goes merrily on, and I merely quote the facts to show trend of public opinion.
Kerry's All-Ireland Championship win prompted the usual jubilation and celebration, but every now and again, something happens which calls on us to put sport into perspective. As detailed already, South Kerry man Jack Murphy was part of the Kerry team for the drawn game against Kildare. Illness prevented him from taking part in the replay. But far more importantly, that same illness ultimately cost Murphy his life. 22-year-old Murphy died of pneumonia just days after the replay.
Jack Murphy is dead. Kerry's wonderful back, the pride of Eva and the hero of the 1926 All-Ireland Football Championship is no more. All Kerry reels underneath the shock.
Murphy's teammates of 1926 formed a guard of honour at his funeral. One of them, Paddy Whitty, presented his All-Ireland medal to the Murphy family. Jack Murphy's legacy lives on to this day. Each year, the winners of the South Kerry Senior Football Championship are presented with the Jack Murphy Memorial Cup. Kerry versus Kildare in 1926 saw the first radio broadcast of an All-Ireland football final. The same counties got to the final again in 1927. The Kingdom surrendered their title, going down by 5-3 to Kildare.
There's joy tonight in Kerry hearts from Doon to Farn Four, from Scar to Glen to Beauty's Home, from Dingle to Rathmore, from Sweet Listowel to Dear Tralee, from Headford to Kinmare. The very hills ring out with glee since Kerry beat Kildare. Oh, where is the heart that could feel sad while listening to those cheers that swept across the oceans wide to exiles' longing ears? With joy some cried while many sighed and others' blood ran cold when victory's star shone bright and far above the green and gold. Yes, Kerry beat Kildare, my boys, beside the Liffey's stream, though cruel luck to Kerry struck to vanquish her 'twould seem. For Phil and Jack were off alack, and our left winger Joe was standing down to watch with frown the battle's ebb and flow. The coin was spun, the Kingdom won, the ball was set to roll. Jack Reardon Grant took up his stand to guard the Clonliffe goal. And when Kildare came dashing down in fierce but fair attack, with lightning-like velocity, Joe Barrett drove them back. The Leinster hope soared mountain high when Stanley got the ball, for many thought that from his try the Kingdom's fort would fall. But Reardon's catch and mighty kick deprived them of a score. More worthy shoulders have not yet Pat Dillon's mantle wore. Again the Leinster champions came charging down the field, in grim determination to make our backmen yield. But Barrett, Walsh and Clifford across the goal were drawn, and all their mighty efforts failed before the Kingdom's brawn. Midst cheers and smiles and brilliant style, Gal Slattery on his own held safe his line and clearing fine well from the danger zone. Each time Jack Walsh and Gannon met, it filled our hearts with joy to see the saves effected by the big Crowdarrig boy. In scoring trim and full of vin, Jack Ryan outwitted Hayes and lashing out with deadly aim set Kerry Hearts ablaze. For Jack would shoot and from his boot, the ball at lightning speed sailed o'er the bar for our first score and Kerry takes the lead. Like greyhounds racing from their slips came Captain Conan Stack and burst right through Kildare's defence, for who could hold them back? 'Twas glorious down the kingdom's right to see the battles royal between the guard, Paul Russell, and their peerless winger Doyle. When Russell scored her second point, he met a rolling ball and drove it straight between the sticks to cheers of good old Paul. Just then, from out the Leinster camp, I heard a loud O'Cone when Pluggy vanquished Stanley and O'Connell slipped Malone. A free against the kingdom made many hold their breath. When Stanley moved to kick the ball, some cheeks grew pale as death. But Barrett, Walsh and Reardon never felt dismayed, and Clifford's worth, when sorely tried, threw Curtis in the shade. We saw a glorious passage then, the grandest of the day, like Arab steeds or forwards from Kildare raced clean away, and Mahony sweeping from the right, a march on Cumann stole. It looked like heaven's gates in sight when Mahony scored the goal. Illurk's dark veil had vanished, and a bright one came instead, for John Joe playing in winning vein, some brilliant charges led, and Pluggy framed at centre half, some fierce attacks repelled, while Bailey's feats on Gorman's left will never be excelled. Tom Mahony scored another point, Bill Gorman did the same, all Kerry men should doff their hats at mention of his name, for victory in the drawn game from Kerry almost rolled, till Gorman came and saved it in the kingdom's green and gold. Hats off to John Joe Sheehy's men, they're Ireland's champions still. Let bonfires bright blaze through the night along each Kerry hill. And when the roll of fame is called in football feats, I mean, may every player be shining there in Kerry's golden green.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.